This is the Meat Eater Podcast coming at you shirtless, severely bug bitten, and in my case, underwearless.
We hunt the Meat Eater Podcast.
You can't predict anything.
Here's something that came up the other day. Is the machine on?
Yeah, we should introduce everyone. We kind of have. Already.
Yeah, we've got into like, okay, so Ronald F. Ronnie Baim.
F and Ronnie.
Being in the trades and having employees, Ronnie's name is usually preceded by effing.
only by my employees.
Not clients. But
which you and your brothers are several of my ex-employees.
Yeah, and when I worked there, we would always say, well, hey, Ronnie.
I hate this job. Effing Ronnie. But you never said it to my face.
No, I was brought up. I was not brought up that way. I was brought up to talk bad about people behind their back. That's my Midwest upbringing. Giannis Poutelis. A guy wrote in to say that if you go into some voice recognition thing and say Giannis Poutelis, it'll say, did you mean Giannis Poutelis?
Is that right?
Yeah. He thinks he must be famous.
I wonder how many times he tried that voice recognition.
Yeah, Giannis Poutelis. Because when I go to have my car call you, I have to say, call Giannis Poutelis. And then it pulls you up.
Yeah.
If I say call Giannis, it doesn't know what I'm talking about. Doug Dern.
Here I am.
And Rufus Wolf.
You got it.
Russell Wolf.
You got it, brother.
Rufus.
Roof.
Roof.
Just roof. Like Roofy. The one on your house.
The one over this hotel in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Doug, what we were talking about this the other day, and I made a mistake, and man, did we get a lot of dudes writing in about the correction. I said that the biggest whitetail ever killed, and I gave the wrong place.
Huh.
Do you know the answer? You being a whitetail feller?
I don't. I do, but I don't. I can't think of it.
Is
right
it
now.
Milo?
Pat Durkin drives around. Do you know, on Durkin's truck, do you know that Durkin has decals of the world's biggest whitetails on his truck? It's like sticker cutouts.
Doesn't everybody in Wisconsin?
He keeps it next to his Packers sticker, of course. And then arrayed around the Packers sticker are big giant whitetail bucks.
I never made the connection.
You don't know about the Milo Hansen buck?
Actually, I knew about them.
Isn't that Ohio?
Saskatchewan, right?
Saskatchewan. I had said that it was shot in Alberta, and this guy says, among several other fellers, says this is incorrect. The world's largest typical white-tailed deer was shot in Saskatchewan by Milo Hansen in 1993, 213 5/8 inches. This guy also goes on to say, like, we get people annoyed all the time because, like, when we'll talk about various calibers, we don't talk about the 308. This guy goes on to say, it's interesting to note that two of the top three world record typical whitetail deer were taken by 308 Winchesters. And he goes on from there to say, this is why I call my 308 the big giant deer attractor.
It's a long name for a caliber.
Mm-hmm. That was just the thing I wanted to bring up. Another correction.
Still, I'm going to drop coincidence on that one.
You think coincidence? I think coincidence too. Because we acknowledge corrections. There's some podcasts, if they acknowledge corrections, they wouldn't have time for the podcast.
there's a lot of news shows too out there.
They
wouldn't have time for the news show if they had to sit around acknowledging corrections.
Oh, yeah. So we... because we acknowledge corrections, I think that it generates a lot more corrections. It's like a snake eating its tail.
It's catch 22. Yeah.
I had said how Petty's American Girl. I'm looking at you, Doug, because I know you like
Tom Petty.
You like a music feller.
Yeah.
I had said, because I had always heard that American Girl was based on a suicide of a student that in Gainesville, Florida. The Gators. I'd always heard that. This guy wrote it and said that's complete horse shit. It's not about a girl. There was a suicide. It's not about that girl. It's urban legend. Petty talked about it. This guy says, I'm not trying to rag on you, but you ought to know.
it's more of a composite or something.
It's just not. It's like
he wrote a song.
I had always heard it was about this girl killing herself. And if you listen to it, you can kind of see.
Sure. She was an American girl.
Yeah. And she could hear the cars roll by on old 441. And for one desperate moment, oh God, it's so painful. Right? One could see. I think it was Sammy Hagar that once said that his lyrics are, someone will correct me on this. I think it was Sammy Hagar who said
you
his
are
lyrics,
correction.
When he listens to a song and he thinks he knows what they're saying and later learns that they're saying something else, he just takes what he thought they were saying and makes that his song.
That's how he writes songs?
Maybe. Yeah, it's a great idea.
Yeah, it is.
I think there's a U2 song where in it he said a few broken bones and some loose change, which I thought was like a great title for a book. That's not what he says. I later looked it up.
Huh. And it was?
In the Garden of Eden. You know what he's saying?
In the Garden of Eden.
Yeah, but that's where it became one and the same. Now.
Now you know.
Ronnie's just got a blank look on his face.
Well, like, his blank look is not going anywhere soon. because there's a couple other things. Like, we got into, like, we just happened to cover some stuff that wound up generating, like, a lot of clarifications. We had talked about the whole, all right, Yanni, Giannis, I want you to, I'm going to test your abilities. Explain corner hopping.
Oh, that's easy.
Okay. And then while doing it, I invite you to describe it.
Then go into the aerial space discussion.
That's where I'm leading with this, because we got into like a legality issue, which we can't start. No, we talked about two things in one. You're not off the hook. You're still going to explain corner hopping.
Yeah.
We had a guy write in with a thing where he's saying, and this is something Yanni has done. You're standing on private land. You're standing on public land. And you're looking across an expanse of private land that you do not have permission on. And on the other side of that private land is more public land upon which stands one's target, being deer or whatever. And you shoot, blouch, and your bullet flies over the dude's land that you don't have permission on. Is that legal? Yanni's actually done this.
No, I was almost.
Almost did it. I probably maybe have. I don't know. No, I don't know. And that led into a discussion of the problem with corner hopping. And Giannis will explain corner hopping.
Yeah.
But, hold on, 1 minute, too. We put the airspace question, like, can your bullet fly across land you don't have permission to be on? Can your bullet trespass? We put the airspace question to a game warden in Idaho, and said he said in Idaho that would be legal.
Hmm.
But it prompted a lot of listener feedback. Now Yanni will step in and explain corner hopping and how it relates to what we're talking about.
Yeah, corner hopping is in a checkerboarded landscape of where you have different land management and owners. And the easiest way to look at that is imagine a checkerboard and all the black pieces are state or public or federal. All the red squares are private. So
I'm tracking.
At every four corners, you have two black and two red touch. Corner hopping would be that if you're on the public, the black, you would just step over and through the airspace and onto the other black, and you get onto another section. Mm-hmm. No
Which
big
is
deal.
Fine in the game of checkers.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. No one yells at you in checkers.
So okay. Go ahead. But I think in most states, well, I don't know. We'll get into it here.
I'm going to get into it because it's tricky.
Yeah, and I don't think we're going to resolve it today. I think it's going to be an ongoing thing. We're going to have some experts on to talk about it.
There is no resolution.
There is no resolution.
And which we'll discuss in a minute.
So, did I explain it well enough for you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So people are basically saying that, no, you can't corner hop because although you're not touching my land, you're going through the airspace above my land when you corner hop.
Okay, Joel. Go ahead, Doug.
Well, it was an arborist question.
Let me. Can I stop the arborist question?
Of course.
Oh, I already know what it is because I think a dude brought it up. A dude that wrote in brought it up.
The idea that
on that because I want to check something.
All right.
Roof. Did you follow that?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Great. Good job,
Yanni. And I could argue I could go from red to red without infringing on any black space.
It's white, isn't it?
Well, he used black and red.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
On a checkerboard?
Yeah. It's black and red.
Oh, okay.
Chess is normally black and white.
All right. Yes. Theoretically, one could step from. Okay. Go ahead, Doug. A tree.
So a tree is growing on your property line, and the branches of, and it's on the neighbor's property, but those branches are hanging over your, onto your land, or onto your, not your land, onto your space, into your, over your driveway, onto your house. Can you cut those branches off?
Oh, yeah. I used to be an arborist.
Well, that's why I knew that. So that's why I was.
I've been involved. I've been up in the tree as the neighbors argued about it.
I've had many arborists have that. Yeah,
I've looked down at the tops of head, the tops of the heads of individuals engaged in such argument.
With the chainsaw idling and, yeah.
Oh, speaking of chainsaws idling, I told my kids the story of when your dad chopped himself open with a chainsaw.
Why would you tell your kids that story?
Yeah, I don't know why, but you know what part they like a lot? It's the part I like, that you told me that your old man, drives himself to a bar, he gets medevaced, and later someone goes out to retrieve his stuff. This is like an ad for the chainsaw.
Yeah.
What kind of saw was it?
It's a Homelite 450.
Yeah, later they go out to retrieve his dad's stuff out in the woods where he
fingers?
No,
he just went out there.
Saw. Yeah. Yeah. Oh. And the saw is laying there out in the woods.
Still. That's the part that...
They love that detail.
But I thought, when you started to say that, I thought, well, he's going to teach them the lesson of course, they're a little young for it, but of always have your vehicle pointing out because you never know when you're going to need to leave in a hurry.
You know, I can't remember how I got into it, and they don't drive yet, the oldest being 7.
Yeah, but, you know, with their bikes, they could start practicing. Yeah.
Well, your scooter, leave it face now.
You never know where you're going to have to leave.
Here's what happened to Doug's dad. At bedtime, Steve's checking everyone. Did you back your bike in, or did you pull it in? All right, go downstairs.
Yeah, they liked the part that the saw was still out in the woods running, and they bring it up all the time.
Huh.
Yeah. They like the story about a good saw. All right. Joel Webster from TRCP. We're still on this corner crossing correction. It's not a correction. Clarification. He writes in to say, in regards to your discussion about corner crossing, it's a legal gray area. The state of Montana's access guide says it is not recommended. It doesn't say that it is illegal. He's never heard of anyone being cited for it. But they do not recommend it. I emailed some guys who work for the state government of Wyoming. And he goes on to say it is not their 100% definitive either. And there's no specific statute on the book. However, the state's attorney general in 2004 reviewed it and said, you might not be able to do it, is as close as they've come. So some legislators, because he's saying that the corner lines are infinitely thin and there's no way to cross without entering private airspace. Some legislators have attempted to introduce bills directly authorizing corner crossing, or others have introduced legislation to specifically prohibit it. Neither gets much traction with lawmakers. County attorneys rarely, if ever, try to prosecute for corner crossing unless it's adding to a list of additional offenses to use as a settlement chip. This guy's an attorney. He can't remember the last time he saw someone actually convicted of corner crossing. That said, it's widely understood as impermissible in Wyoming. Not permissible. And he goes on to say how the checkerboard areas have a lot to do with how the railroads were structured and funded. And he says that the inability to jump corners prohibits access to literally hundreds of thousands of acres of public land. So there's that. Another guy.
Ron Bain question.
I mean, this happens to bird hunters constantly.
Oh, of course.
I mean, it doesn't even happen to mountains too much, but
no,
we've been doing it forever.
Corner crossing.
Yeah. Because
you guys corner hop?
Sure.
What states have you corner hopped in?
South Dakota, North Dakota all the time.
But is that private land to private land?
Yeah. It's private land to private land, but I don't see the difference.
You mean corner hopping over another dude's private?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That you don't have permission on.
Don't have permission.
Well, how do you know your boots are the right spot?
We just do it.
Well, mathematically, you're going to be stepping on somebody's land, right?
Right.
Unless there happens to be a corner post there and you got a GPS, you could do it.
Right. But
yeah, you got to go up and over.
You know, when the farmer gives us like, yeah, hunt that 80, and then the next one over is mine too, and you can tell
they're butted only on the corners.
They're made by the same fence. You know, they're butted on the corners, and we don't even go on the corner. We go to the nearest post where it's safe, and so we're just. But our intention isn't to hunt on that person's land. Our intention is to get to that next piece of property.
Okay. I put it to a guy in Idaho, fish and game officer in Idaho. Idaho code 36-1603, known as recreational trespass. The keywords are no person shall enter the property of another. And then there's criminal trespass. And he says that would ultimately, if one were to do this, like you've done it, and the guy that owns the land would get pissed.
Mm-hmm.
He says it's probably, if this were to happen in Idaho, it's probably going to come down to the members of a jury. And no one's been, got it that far where it was interpreted.
So I say it's legal.
And he says until it's challenged and the case, you know, goes to court,
sure,
it's uncharted territory.
Wow, I'm surprised to hear all this because, like, the way you're told, you know, it and it's spelled out, everybody thinks that you cannot do it.
Not recommended.
But it's not. It sounds like it needs to be pushed a little bit.
I think that in Wyoming, I think he's saying that I can see. So we had one of our camera guys heard us talking about this, and he wrote in too. And he got into this thing where, like, how much air do you own above your property? He said in 1946, the Supreme Court acknowledged that the air above your property extends at least up to 83 feet because the Air Force was flying planes buzzing low over a guy's place and scared a bunch of his chickens to death, and he won a lawsuit for them infringing on his thing. Rick thinks it's more likely to be you own about 500 feet. The Supreme Court hasn't explicitly accepted that as the upper limit of property ownership, but it's a useful guideline in trespass cases. Which your damn bullet isn't that high. Your bullet's
five foot off the ground.
Or
6 feet down.
If you're leaning over the fence.
Can you use that person
in the post?
Can you use that person's fence post for a rifle rest?
Yeah. So the military was found to be violating a guy's property rights by buzzing aircraft over it. So the fact that you can buzz a bullet over it, in this case, though, you need to be limiting someone's ability to enjoy their property. And I could see that someone would say, bullets flying around on my property limits my ability to enjoy it.
And the fact that they killed his chickens or whatever, too, you know, it's a loss of property. So,
but see, I could tie that into another scattergun thing. You're allowed to hunt the ditches here in South Dakota.
Okay.
Because I'm tying this into South Dakota.
No, that's great because we're in South Dakota.
So it's legal to hunt the ditches in South Dakota, even if it's private property.
Because it's a right-of-way.
It's a right-of-way.
They don't mind you shooting that close to the road?
No.
Isn't there there's rules about...
Unimproved roads.
Yeah, unimproved.
Unimproved roads, not blacktop.
Dirt road ditches.
Yeah, your common road in South Dakota, you know, gravel road. So that's totally legal. Well, I guarantee it.
I'm not doubting you. It just sounds...
But now in North Dakota, it's the opposite. North Dakota... You cannot hunt the ditch unless you have permission of the landowner that abuts the ditch.
Gotcha.
But my point is...
State to state difference.
State to state difference. But my point is, so when we're ditch hunting pheasants, they come out and they fly. They don't usually fly right down the road. They fly out into private property. And we will shoot them. And you have to get permission to retrieve... In some states, you have to get permission to retrieve the pheasant. Let's just use pheasant for the analogy. You have to get permission to, or in some states you can't have your gun.
Yeah, without firearm.
Without firearm, you can walk in and get it without permission. But some places you have to have permission. But what I get in that is the propellant, the bullets, the BBs.
They're damn sure going over to
they're
guys.
They're damn sure. That's my point. Thank you. They're landing in his property, not even going over it. You are littering lead into his property.
That makes that's me think it's always legal because your shot is always landing.
Exactly.
This unless reminds me of another question a guy just wrote in about, but I'm not going to get into that one right now. Right. Though it is interesting.
But you're literally
has to do a squirrel hunt.
You're putting lead into somebody.
Oh, we can't. Don't tease me like that. I want to ask Doug. I just want to know what you're as a substantial landowner. What's your opinion on the corner hop? You don't. I know because I know your property lines that you don't have
any
corners instance. But let's just say that you had a locked up 40 acres of Wisconsin state land in the middle. But there was a corner to get in there.
Seems fine to me. You know, I'd prefer that somebody came and asked, but, you know, hey, is this going to be all right?
Yeah, well, everyone would prefer that everyone asked everybody everything.
Right, but, yeah, I don't think that's, you know, I mean, if it's state land, it's state land. You know, being the kind of guy I am, I'd probably put a little access corridor across my property to it.
Nice little dove climbing fence.
Just because you're that kind of guy.
Because I'm that kind of guy.
See, this issue
and
starts...
There's people going to write in and say, bullshit, yeah. I know, Doug Duran.
Well, this issue really starts to make its own gravy. Because here's this. A guy writes in from Alaska, and this subject got him thinking. He writes in from Alaska, and he explains that he is moose hunting on the Kenai Peninsula. And he's on just like, let's just say like a general public land. And his back is to a state park. In this state park, in most states, you can't hunt state parks. But some states, there are some state parks you can't hunt. And this is a state park in Alaska where you can hunt. You cannot discharge a firearm on it. It just is in the state park. It's archery only. Same regs apply. Same bag limits and seasons apply, just no firearm discharge. So you can bow hunt it. He's sitting on, which is, I don't know what it was, but let's say he's on state forest with his back to state park, looking out this way to kill a moose on state forest with his rifle. Turns around, biggest blackberry he's ever seen is 20 yards out of the state park. He doesn't shoot because he's like, you can't shoot a gun. Or you can't kill him in there with a gun. He comes home and his old man is on his case because he's like, you would not have discharged a firearm in the state park. You would have discharged a firearm in the state forest.
Yeah.
The bear died in the state park from a firearm wound, but you didn't discharge your gun there. You should have shot the bear. He says, I've never even bothered to call Alaska Fish and Game because there's no way they'll give me a straight answer.
Yeah. Well,
so I call Alaska Fish and Game. And right away, I make the mistake of saying like what I do for a living. So then I had to deal with a public affairs person. And I get to explain it to them the thing, and they refuse
to answer that.
They're like, who? And I'm like, it's just a guy. What year? Where exactly?
But he didn't do it.
And I'm like, he didn't do it. He's just a guy. And then I got frustrated, and I grew frustrated. And I'm like, hey, let's just say hypothetically. We don't deal in hypothetical laws. Oh, I'm like, man. Come on, man.
Huh.
That's how far I got with that.
Well, that's a bummer because they really sometimes try to pride themselves on having it spelled out in the regs so that you don't have hypotheticals.
It's all black and white.
Well, yes. They said you got to tell me the year and the exact location.
That's pretty black and white.
But I mean, I just feel like it'd be possible. You know, sure, I could. I would have had to tell him the year and the exact location, which I didn't have from the guy. Right. I could have wrote the guy back. I'm sure he's listening right now.
Yeah,
he'd had to provide all that extra detail. But it just goes to show.
But you might recall this sign that's on on the land next to my friend Tyson's property. It says, do not shoot into these woods. Mm-hmm. And of course, we've now made a sign on the opposite side that says, do not shoot out of those woods. But I wonder about that, too. You know, it's the same idea. It's a private land issue.
Okay, one more of these things. One more of these things we got to take care of. The whole thing we're talking about with like, okay, a guy writes in and he says, I live in a state where you can't bait. No salt licks, no mineral licks, nothing. But ranchers put them out for cattle. So can I sit over that? I didn't put it there. Right? It depends. It depends. So lots of people wrote in about this. Now, this guy points out an interesting thing that just happened in Alabama. In Alabama, formerly, you could not hunt over bait. they clarified, loosened this law recently and changed it to say, the law, this is what the law says. There is a rebuttal assumption that any bait or feed located beyond 100 yards from the hunter and not within the line of sight of the hunter is not a lure. So he says now people have taken to putting a large hay bale 100 yards from their blind and putting bait beyond the large hay bale.
Good God.
Because it's I'm 100 yards away from it.
Can't see it.
And it's out of my line of sight.
And I'm a pretty good shot up to 150 yards.
Yeah. For real.
And I know if the head's sticking out of that one end of the hay bale, and I can just see its tail, I know where those vitals are. Yeah.
This guy had gripe. Okay. Hold that guy's gripe for a minute. This guy, that led to a conversation about if you're out hunting and you, if you're out hunting and you kill a deer, say, and you're in a no baiting state, you're in a no bear baiting state, but you kill a deer and a bear starts eating the deer carcass, is that baiting? I said, no. This guy says, depends where you are. He was hunting and he's from British Columbia. They were out hunting moose in northern BC. They had jet boated 120 miles upriver to their moose camp. Their buddies had been in there a week before, and they had killed a moose across the river from camp. You could actually see the carcass and gut pile from the camp. These guys had a grizzly tag. This is before the recent ban on grizz hunting in BC. And halfway through their hunt, a British Columbia game warden shows up in a helicopter to check them out. He's checking them out. They explain that they had a grizzly tag, and this gentleman informs them that it would be illegal for them to shoot a bear on that kill. And it would be regarded as baiting a bear since it was a hunter-killed carcass. If that moose had died of natural causes, it would not be baiting.
That was the interpretation from the law or just these guys?
Apparently that's the interpretation of the law. A hunter-killed carcass is regarded as bait. A naturally killed carcass is not.
All right, we put that to bed.
Kind of.
Whoa.
In Colorado, you're A-okay. Colorado, you can't bait bears, but you're A-okay if you kill a bear off your own gut pile. This guy, this is the last thing on this issue. This guy had real gripe with how we were saying ranchers use them. Use the salt licks. He said he'd like to point out that oftentimes these salts and minerals are distributed by ranchers in order to keep cattle away from vital riparian areas. And you brought this up. You'd put a salt lick out in order to congregate animals near fences. Is this all making sense, Doug? You run a couple cattle.
Yeah, I run a few cattle.
You put salt out for them?
I put white salt and trace mineral salt
out for them. Do the deer like the salt?
I have it close to the building, so I don't really get too many deer right down to the buildings. But yeah, no, of course deer like salt. But the purpose for doing it is, I mean, it's a health thing. They like salt, and then the trace minerals,
Do you place them strategically, or does it matter in your location? You're not dealing with vast acreages.
You know, I put them close to a place that I can back the truck up to, so I don't have to carry it very far.
That makes sense.
They're heavy. All right. Does anybody here know Haywood Banks, the musician Haywood Banks?
I don't.
If you have young children, you should look up Haywood Banks.
I don't have young children.
Yeah, such hits as I'm Looking at the World Through Fly's Eyes, Dead Puppies Aren't Much Fun, which I think, you know what, I've been saying, but I think maybe someone else sang Dead Puppies Aren't Much Fun. But I was going to bring that up because Ronnie, I want to talk about the dogs.
The dogs. The dogs.
Which you lost.
I've now
two
lost.
Two prized
breeding age dogs for my kennel. Brocco Italianos, yeah. Two of them in one fell swoop.
In one fell swoop.
One.
Is it best to get into this tragedy? Is it best to approach it through the lens of monetary value or through the lens of emotional value?
Both.
Let's start with, what you want to start with?
Emotional.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Emotional value.
Lay it out for me, emotional value.
Emotionally.
And then we'll talk about the strange circumstances under which these dogs perished.
So emotionally, your dogs become part of your family. You it, just like kids, at some days, you like some of them better than others.
Yeah.
But you love them all. So the loss of the dog is a loss, is a personal loss. So that's the emotional part of it. And the traumatic part of it then is the way in which they die. There's different, like, an example. I gave a German Shorthaired puppy to Rusty, how many years ago?
Roof.
How many years ago? 20?
How long have you guys been friends?
We're still old.
Since about 1964. So. Late 90s.
Late 90s. And
you that gave, hold on, back up. You gave him a what?
I gave him a short hair puppy, German short hair puppy.
Well, one he couldn't sell because it had a...
But you weren't a breeder then.
Not a breeder.
You're a recreational breeder.
Recreational breeder.
A litter.
And his dog died at age 6.
What kind of dog was it?
Short hair. He brought it up to my place.
Dead.
So, no, blind. And we went to the vet. And even though I hadn't, I mean, I saw the dog once a year, I had to go to the vet with him and we put the dog down. And that was an emotional. So the emotional part of it.
6 years old.
Yeah.
42 in dog years.
Yeah. Right in the prime. Oh,
that strikes.
Yeah, close to home.
That hits home.
How old are you, Steve?
That hits home. I don't like that one bit. So that is sad.
Yeah. So I was crying for that dog even. So the emotional loss.
You cried for that dog.
Yeah.
Tears rolling down your cheeks.
My vet tech, she's seen me in there a few times. And when I went in there and I was saying goodbye to her, they were just rolling down my face. And she looked, and she'd never seen me cry before bringing dogs in, dead or alive.
Roof, answer this as though Ronnie's not in the room. Was it a good bird dog?
It didn't get enough formal training early on, but she had a will of unbelievable, but she was not a real graceful hunter.
Yeah. So it was like a smart kid that never got to go to school.
Yeah. Big go.
Yeah. Like me. Like Ronnie. Right. Yep. All right. So, okay. So their 6 year old dog goes blind and dies.
I'm just telling you, that's the emotional part. What was your other, the financial part of it?
Yeah, because these are high test dogs.
Yeah. And nowadays, when you go to Pheasant Fest and walk the floor, which you haven't
been
today,
I haven't been down to the
floor yet. When you're down there,
you're
going to see a bunch of dog breeds there now. I would venture to say they're all within a few hundred dollars of what my dogs cost nowadays. But thing was, 10 years ago, my dogs cost twice as much as them. So it's definitely...
Because of rarity.
The rarity.
Because there's not many Brock Italianos.
It's just like a rare coin, you know. Yeah. You can't get much for a nickel when they made 50 million nickels in your coin collection.
Yeah.
But now, the dogs have come up to a different price level. So it's...
Just dogs in general?
Dogs in general. Yanni, did you look into that long hair I told you, that German long hair?
I went to, I looked into it. We went and looked at.
You looked at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bird dogs in general are more expensive now. Like,
than ever before.
And way beyond like rates of inflation.
Yes.
What do you attribute that to?
People's emotions and what they want. Just like we're able to buy bigger houses than we used to be able to. We're able to buy more truck with a longer payment. I think we just McMansion-ish kind of.
Yeah.
Mentality. Well,
there's some better exposure nowadays, though, right? We didn't know anything about hunting dogs when we were hunting back in Illinois.
No, and you're right. And people put way more weight on health testing, so people are investing more into their breeding stock than they used to.
So, like, the ceiling has gone up. But you can still go out and get all kinds of free dogs at the pound, right?
Yeah. In fact, I'm going to interview a guy who only hunts with dogs he rescues from a pound. Bird dogs, beagles.
Dude, that word drives me crazy.
I know.
When you were a kid, you went down to the pound and got a dog. Now you go down to the pound and rescue the dog.
He was in the middle of a lake and you had to give him a life preserver.
Yeah, like it's like
mouth-to-mouth resuscitation.
I don't know why. It's like such an old manny thing. There's certain words that
you're
come out.
You're getting to be an old manny.
Yeah, well, okay. Like you used to go over to your buddy's house. Now you have a play date. It's like, I don't know why it bugs me. And it used to be you know, Stevie got a new, or Bobby got a new dog. Where'd he get it? I don't know. They went down to the pound and got a dog. It's like, oh, I rescued this dog. It's like you come in and they got a pistol to the dog's head.
And you tackle the guy.
Threw yourself in front of it.
Rescue dogs.
I need a decision now, right now. You taking the dog or not?
I'm cocking this. Right. Is this
going to otherwise, the trap door is released and the noose comes tight.
Now, a rescue would be a bunch of dogs that were going to be put down and you break in the night before. And you take them.
I'd be like, no joke. I rescued this son of a bitch dog.
He was right outside the gas chamber.
They were backing up the gurneys out there.
Yeah, the crematorium fired up.
But what's sad is I just used that word rescue, and I never used to use that word rescue.
Because it's just like I use Playdate now. I just gave in, and now I'm like, Rosemary is having a Playdate.
It's machine learning.
Yeah. Man. All right, so anyways, the ceiling, the limit that people are comfortable paying for a dog, you have seen go up during your time as a trainer, dog breeder.
To even a breed that maybe have, let's say, a particular breed that I judge, that I see a lot of, German Shorthairs. You could find one in almost every town in the United States over X amount of population.
A breeder.
Even those dogs that you can find without traveling to Europe or all the way across the country, those people have raised the bar in their breeding, their health testing, their selection of who they're going to breed, and they're like, my dogs are worth that too. And once you can't find a $500 short hair, you're going to pay $1,500 for a short hair.
So that's what a run-of-the-mill, decent, pedigreed short hair goes for.
I would say $1,500, a good one, yeah.
So you started years ago, we've talked about this before, you started to traffic in Italian Broncos.
Yeah.
Bronco Italianos.
Yeah.
And you breed them.
Yeah.
And the bitch will put off
up to usually 10 to 12 puppies. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you sell these puppies.
Yes.
And you usually sell them before they're born. Or is that not true?
About half are pre-sold.
Like people pay deposits on them.
They either pay a deposit or I keep an email from them. But they're almost always sold before the time they're 10 weeks.
I'm certain it was not Haywood Banks who sung Dead Puppies That Much Fun. The more I think about it.
Now I'm going to have to look that up.
No, I got it for you right here.
What is it?
I didn't get too deep into it, but there's like a band called Dr. Demento that sang it, but then also Ogden Edsel.
Yeah, I don't know those guys. It's a good song. So people write in and say, I want one, but you never know how many you're going to have anyways, right?
Right.
So that's why you can't close the deal.
Yeah, you can't. You just got to wait.
And how many, in a dog that you've owned, how many puppies have you been able to sell off a single dog?
If I be accurate, I'm going to say 38 or 40 out of one female.
So one female can kick out $50,000 worth of puppies.
Yes. Yes.
I'm just getting to the monetary value.
Right. And actually a little more than that, because if you take the number 40 puppies times 2,000, that's 80,000.
Oh, so they're more valuable.
You
can get two
because of those dogs.
A fella could get $2,000 for a Bronco Italiano.
Hey, we don't have to deal with a correction later. The band name.
I've left it open enough where there's no room for connection.
The band name is Ogden Edsel. Bill Frenzer was a part of the band. Dr. Demento was a show that was played on often. There's also Keith Johnson and Bill Carey were in the band Ogden Edsel.
Thanks, Yanni.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it goes, dead puppies aren't much fun. And that's true.
Your kids are going to sing that song.
That is true. So that's the monetary. Because it was like, so now tell the story what happened.
Well,
I just wanted to establish the emotional and financial.
Right, and it was. You cannot help but think that, like, oh my God, I would have bred that dog two more times. And if anybody's, you'll hear breeders say this, and they can all send me the hate mail. You shouldn't be breeding for money. Well, you shouldn't be breeding to lose money. You know what I mean?
Gotcha. Yeah.
You know, why would you set yourself up unless you're like, what's it called, pro bono lawyer? I'm not a pro bono breeder.
Yeah. You know? And the dog, like, it's not that the dog's particularly, that it's not a foregone conclusion that type of dog is any better at hunting than any other type of dog.
Absolutely not.
There's a certain amount of aesthetics. And
It's a look and it's a demeanor that they happen to have.
Gotcha.
But I could find you that demeanor in almost every other breed.
Gotcha.
Just have to find the right breeder.
So you kind of fall in love with sort of like, just like the groove of the dog.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you guys use that term?
No.
Just the general vibe.
The groove of the dog.
The general vibe of the dog, how it kind of just relates to people. And yeah.
Well, from the couch to the field, right? It's a
it's dog. Like field to table, couch to field.
Yeah.
Good tie-in.
And so you fell in love with this kind of dog.
Right, right. And I've lost a lot of dogs over the years, you know. And back when I was in my 30s and 40s, I don't know. I don't remember really crying over it. You know, it's as I got older and become a father and going to be a grandfather soon, I'm turning into a big blubbering baby when it comes to losing dogs.
Yeah, you become in tune to the cycles of life and death.
I don't put them up on Facebook when they die or anything. That's my, you know, a lot of people do that.
Yet.
No, never.
Because you mean you don't want to like solicit?
I don't want
you don't want to solicit.
No. People will find empathy. Out later. Yeah, I don't. But anyway, talking about what happened to the dog. So I went down
Who were the two? Who were the two
it
dogs?
It was Oscar and Katie.
And tell what their background was.
Oscar was a 2-year-old male who won, was just starting to get his wings in the field as far as being a good bird dog.
Okay.
And he had also his conformation, his build, his whole body was like, let's say like a bodybuilder. Like if you had a bodybuilding contest, a conformation contest is a bodybuilding contest for dogs. The judge walks up and says, nice muscles, nice back legs, nice straight. He's not bow legged like me. You know, the dog gates across to.
So, like, a pug isn't going to do well on this.
Against other pugs. But not against the. So, he had, on top of, in his case, being a male, he had a monetary value down in the future of people would want to breed to him because you don't want to lose the breed and body type. He had a classic.
Gotcha.
If
he's going to throw a dog that looks like a Brocco Italiano.
Exactly. Yeah.
Question.
Yeah.
So. Is his value similar to that of the female because of
his no?
I mean, in terms of the number of
no, because I probably could never get 40 breedings out of him.
Why not?
I mean, because you don't
just
want to
logistically,
logistically, and you don't want in a small breed, you don't want the sire to be the same in 15 different states because now you're losing out on breeding ability. Then you're breeding daughters to fathers, and
okay.
So
can I ask you one other thing? So is that then why you were saying, I mean, if I did the math, they're having 8 to 10, so you're really only breeding that female four times.
Three to four times,
depending
on.
But she's living to be 14 or 15.
13, 14, yeah.
So you stop out of sympathy to the dog.
You stop out of, like, mostly by the time they're 8, most people will never breed a dog over.
Because it's too hard on them. It's
too hard. Just like a woman. You're going to get higher incidence of Down syndrome in a woman. Mother over 40 than you will a woman in her 20s. Same thing with puppies. Artie's last litter, we thought we were going to lose 3 and we had to do a cesarean. She couldn't deliver the last 3.
And how old is that dog?
She was 7.5 when she had the litter.
Do they do AI on dogs or do you ship the dog over
there? You want me to tell that story?
Sure. Okay. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Know, this one might take a minute. First time a lady wanted to breed to another dog I had, which was Oscar's relation.
So okay. Like a client.
A lady in California.
Okay.
Saw my dog, saw pictures of it, and then looked at the pedigree. She says, I got to breed to your dog. I want your dog's lines in my female's loins. And that's how. And she goes, have you ever been to a reproduction clinic? I'm like, no. And so she's Googling all this. I'm at work in Virginia in the Valley. And she writes me back. She goes, there's a clinic 2 hours away from you. Blah, blah, blah. I said, okay. I need you to be there Tuesday for a collection. Because she's monitoring the progesterone numbers on her female. So she knows that first overnight frozen or chilled semen has got to leave on Tuesday. So
when the female is going to be ripe.
She'll be ripe, and she'll be ripe for so many days, and we'll have to do this a couple times.
Okay.
So you cover a span. Anyway, so I have never, Doug, you might be able to speak to this. I didn't know how they collect.
Doug's no strange to do a little AI.
Okay.
That's for sure.
I did not know how they extract the semen out of an animal. I never seen it done, never asked.
And you're picturing a needle.
A needle or some kind of a catheter, like, you know, running up the sheath.
And well, why not have a little fun?
So
that's what Ronnie commenced to do.
So, and you know me, I'm not short on flirtation or anything else, right? And I'm not a quiet guy. I walk in with my dog. She says, follow me. This very tall, good-looking brunette vet with a Russian accent which I happen to really love a Russian accent.
Okay.
She says, come with me here. I hand her the dog. She said, no, you come with. They're better with you with.
This
better.
Is a Russian accent. But,
yeah, that's as best I can do for a female Russian accent.
That's the worst Russian accent I've ever
Maybe
heard.
If he said Soviet bloc, it'd give us a little more, give us a little more wiggle room.
He's like, you know, one of them accents.
like Colonel Clint Werner Kempler and Hogan's Heroes. That's what I'm trying to
Eastern
get.
Well, that Europe. Was a German.
Well, Eastern Bloc, where, you know. So
one of those areas that got wrapped up in World War II somehow.
Smart kid who didn't get to go to school.
Right here. Or acting school.
So she comes in, come. And honest to God, she was, on a scale of 10, she was an easy 8. Beautiful woman.
Okay.
About 40 years old.
Okay.
And she has me, she goes, you hold the dog's collar. So I'm standing to the side of the dog. And she calls for the vet tech to come in with, this happened to be a golden retriever that was in heat. So they back the golden retriever in, tail, you know, butt to nose. And of course, the male's like, whoa, you know, he starts sniffing, his tail starts wagging, and he starts getting a little excited, which all male dogs will do. And she proceeds to straddle over my dog. And she's stroking his back, going, that's a good boy. Oh, that's a good boy. And she proceeds to give him a reach around.
Like a wrestling move.
Yeah. Under his groin. And for the life of me, I didn't really believe what she was doing. She was getting him erect.
Exciting him.
Exciting him. And then she reaches over for this baggie, this long triangular bag about 18 inches long.
Okay.
And she puts that in her other hand. And now she's milking the dog. And she's
milking the pooch.
But her talking, she goes, that's a good boy. Good boy. Oh, yeah. Good boy.
I'm tracking.
I am standing.
And you found this to be
no, I lost
slightly,
all,
you found it to be slightly erotic.
No. It was only when she introduced herself that I get a little like, oh, she's cute.
Okay. All right. So you walk in and initially
I'm going to hand a dog.
Initially, I'm a married man, but I can acknowledge that
beautiful woman.
Yeah. You know, smart, beautiful woman.
The rest of it's just
I'm aware of this, and you're saying those feelings didn't escalate with the milking.
No, they didn't escalate.
They killed it for you.
They killed it because
I'm glad to hear this.
I could not. I've always
Yanni, were you getting a little excited during that telling?
Roof made me tell the story last night again in the motel room. I don't understand that at all.
Right before you went to bed, right. Or what?
did you say anything like,
I couldn't,
wow,
I couldn't.
How do you feel about that process?
Tongue-tied, totally.
Yeah, I would have been.
Tongue-tied.
I'd love to have a camera on you during that process.
I was like, I wanted to be like the smart aleck, like a comedian and go like, next, you know. But
that's called sexual harassment.
But I mean, I couldn't even think of the funny things I wanted to think about. I was totally embarrassed. It'd be like walking in on Sue giving the kids a sex talk when they were going. I'd be like, this isn't comfortable. Yeah. I was totally uncomfortable.
You were uncomfortable watching your dog.
Yeah. So that was your answer to AI. Yes, I'm familiar with AI. And Doug, do you do that to a cow?
Not you personally.
But the AI part hasn't happened yet. The AI part, just so folks know, artificial insemination.
This is the collection process.
Yeah, they then mail it off, and then she takes a turkey baster. The contraption looks several ways.
Yeah.
And you put in the dog and breed the dog. Yeah.
I'm surprised that it has to be so fresh, because with cattle, frozen semen, they freeze semen. You can use a bull that's been dead for years.
Well, we do. I had him collected, dropped him off at a collection because he was such a good dog, good example of the breed. Up in Cincinnati or Columbus, he's still frozen in some straws to this day.
But I didn't have anything. She's in a hurry because she's got her dog coming into
heat. And with dogs, we're looking for multiple puppies. What do you get? Two calves or one only?
Usually one, sometimes two.
So. With dogs, the more counts per million of live protozoa, spermatozoa, whatever the word is. So you want it frozen will work, and you'll usually get a smaller litter, typically. doesn't.
Is that right?
It's not a rule, but typically. And so fresh
you're
chilled.
You're sure of this?
Yeah. Fresh chilled is the next best thing to...
Homemade.
Homemade, yeah. Homegrown, yeah.
Yeah. Did... How much did you get for that when you did that?
Yeah, standard is the price of a puppy. At that point, it was $2,500.
Really?
Yeah. And then the dog starts like going to the vet, too. I mean, literally. Listen, you bring him into
I'll believe it, because check this out about Ronnie's dogs. The other day, I called Ronnie on the phone. We're talking on the phone. And the dogs are going ape shit. His dogs barking and squealing. His dogs have figured out that when he's on the phone, like he'll be on the phone and they'll make noise. And he'll be like, and let them all out because they're making noise. Now, when he gets on the phone, they just make noise.
They just make noise.
Because so they know out. That he'll boot them out right. for making noise when he's on the phone.
But I could be on my computer forever, listen to YouTube or whatever. They don't say nothing. They lay there. The minute I'm on that phone,
they're like,
I got a biscuit or a bone or I get to go out.
I'm interested about the golden retriever and the collection facility. Well, no, because obviously they just have a rotating stock of females that.
Yes, they a good vet clinic that is specialized in artificial collection. AI or even people actually bring their two dogs to a vet to let them do it because they're afraid of the process.
Mm-hmm.
But they are. But so those clinics are so big that there's almost always a dog coming in for a progesterone test. And on one occasion, I had cotton balls at a place. They did not have a bitch in heat. They call her teaser bitch. There was no teaser bitch. So they had cotton balls that they continually dab on the female's back end, and then they keep them in a jar.
Oh.
And
it's like using dough and rut.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Is bitch still widely acceptable in the dog world?
Yeah. Like if I were to walk up to, which I did yesterday, I would say that's a nice looking bitch.
And is that right?
You definitely use the word bitch. Yeah. You don't say dog. You say bitch or that's a good looking guy.
And anyone.
I don't know anybody would skip on saying that.
Imagine that there was a
and the
nun.
Male's called the sire?
Sire. That? You can call them the boy, the guy.
Imagine there was a nun. Yeah. A nun dog breeder.
A nun, like a Catholic
nun dog breeder. Would she say, my bitch?
Did you go to any Catholic school?
I got an aunt that's a Catholic nun.
Okay. She a dog breeder?
Do you think she would have said?
Do you think she has time for a call?
have an aunt who's a nun?
Yeah, a couple uncles that were priests, aunt that's a nun.
Would she use bitch or a synonym?
Synonym.
Uh-huh. So it's not totally. So anyways.
Yeah.
I want to go back
Oscar.
To the.
Oh, go ahead,
to the backup plan when you don't have a dog in heat with those cotton balls. There might be a whole opportunity for a line of Britney magazines or something for them dogs.
Yeah, I was going to point that out because guys I've talked to who have to go in and do.
Scratch and sniff.
Guys I've talked to who have to go in and do a sample.
Hopefully they're not bringing in a Labrador.
No, they're not. But they go into a room with magazines. Then you come out and you're like back out in the clinic. And I've had a number of friends say it's just always so awkward because like everyone that works there
knows
you've been like in there thumbing through some magazine,
right?
Like with just
with
door.
One hand.
Yeah, it's like you gotta come out and be like,
I got what you need right here.
But I had to do that after getting a vasectomy. I had to bring in a number of samples. But at least you go back home. Then you come.
Right. Yeah.
You come back in when you come. Back in, you can sort of have the aura about you as though you had assistance with this collector.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one knows how you worked it up, right? So you can kind of like maintain like some self-composure and be like, oh, yeah, buddy.
But
don't you worry about how I worked up these samples.
Steve, I got to digress back to Doug because I want to know how they do it with, I want to know how they do it with a bull.
We never had bulls that we collected from. When we had dairy cattle, we had a Holstein bull for a while.
Okay.
And then
he just did it on his own.
Right. And his father ended up being deadly.
Bull semen's a big thing, right? It's collective.
It's huge. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So how do they do it?
I've only been to a facility once, and that was when I was in high school, and which is the wrong place to take a bunch of high school boys. But so they actually had steers that they did the same thing with. They were rubbing.
Yeah. They're in heat.
Yeah.
Rubbing what?
They were rubbing estrogen or from a cow that's in heat on because I
turn to arouse them.
To arouse them, and then they're the.
Well, you said steer. You meant bull.
No, the steer. They don't use a cow, so they rub the stuff on the back of a steer.
Oh, they make. Really? Oh, come on! That's what they do to that poor thing.
Well, and they I don't know why they didn't want a cow. Maybe because then they don't have to have cows around to milk and.
So they would take a steer and rub the smell of a ripe cow.
Yeah. And then it's a collection thing like that, except
and
for
he
they're
would
not
smell it and be like, "Man, I'm seeing one thing and smelling another."
That's right.
But they, they must not be that hard.
They're seeing
to
it from the back end. Yeah, right. I mean,
because remember the story we heard when we were in Wyoming trapping beavers?
No.
About how that dude, how the neighbor had lost a bunch of steers because they had like, it was like an overdose or too much of that implant drug that they had given it. And a bunch of those steers were getting like way too much testosterone. And for the steers that were getting that first, the steers that weren't as like getting the testosterone, the testosterone jacked up ones were chasing all the other ones around and basically killing them, riding them so much that they were killing these steers that hadn't gotten the equal amount of drugs.
Wow. Like wrestlers.
Like just dry humping them to death.
Yeah, like wrestlers. Dude, that's, I got some friends that are wrestlers and man, they still like to wrestle. Yeah. Wrestlers like to wrestle. So
I didn't wrestle in high school.
I'm ready to move on to something else.
Okay.
I wish we had more time to talk about. I want to throw in one thing real quick. And you, Ronnie, don't even discuss it. I'm going to tell us thing about to date. This will help date Ronnie. When Ronnie was a kid.
I know where this is going.
When Ronnie was a kid in Chicago public schools. When you took swim class, all the boys would have to strip down and swim naked at school.
That's true.
Okay. So
he never told you the coach also did, right?
Okay, so Oscar.
We thought that was odd.
Yes.
Oscar and Katie. Okay.
Oscar and Katie. So there you are.
So
Oscar is a up-and-coming stud. And Katie is a tested
one-time bred female.
One litter of pups.
Yeah, had a litter of 8 pups, so she had a good-sized litter.
And so 2 dogs whose future is ahead of them.
Future's ahead of them, financial future, emotional future, everything. Yeah,
Everything's looking good.
Everything's looking like
roses. And there you are, you're driving to?
I was in Indiana in a state park. The state park was not open, per se, for vehicle traffic. But this particular...
Explain per se.
Well, there was no guard. You didn't need a state park pass to get into it.
Because it was off-season.
It was off-season.
I see.
But this part of the state, for some reason, has an old hotel on the property, and they use it like a B&B. So,
okay.
And it happens to be in a state park.
But it's not all set up for summer activities.
It's set up year-round for staying there. You know, people can walk the trails and stuff. So there's really nobody there, basically.
And it's gated or not gated?
Just a front stone gate. Yeah, it's not gated.
Okay.
Anyway, I get there. I check in the motel. There's no dogs allowed a room.
Oh, you're actually staying in the place.
I'm staying there.
What state is this in again?
Indiana.
Okay.
Indiana. And so I
get... you're traveling.
I'm going to be working with dogs and doing some interviews 5 miles away the next 2 days.
Okay.
At a training clinic. And so there's nothing out in these woods. I check into the room. I already know that dogs aren't allowed in. And my dogs, you know the box they travel in. Big 3-dog, 3-door box. I asked Leigh, I said, where's the best spot for me to let my dogs air out, feed them and air out? Air out is their term for make. You know.
No.
Shit, take a crap.
Well, you just made a symbol that I associate.
you never heard this?
Completely different.
It's from the Goldbergs. She goes, did you make this morning? She asked the kids. Oh. Like, Mom.
So if you're using 2 fingers, it's so Ronnie's making a cup. Ronnie's making a cup with one hand and taking 2 fingers and moving them in and out of the cup,
right.
Which I interpreted to be
we're back
more
in
related to what we were talking about a minute ago. Yeah. Like you're saying if it's 2 fingers, it becomes
right. It was a
going
way for
number
like,
2.
It was a way for like a mom to not ask you in public if do you have to go to the bathroom? Did you make?
I would rather my mom. I would rather my mom.
Yes.
Let's leave the Goldbergs
hey,
out.
Kid. Yeah.
I would rather than someone going like, that little boy's mom keeps making the universal, the universally accepted symbol for
something else. So
air out.
Air out. And she said, I would just take the trail right around the back of the building, go down to the reservoir, and let the dogs do whatever they do. So I get there. A friend of mine joins me without dogs. I've got four dogs.
And just running them around.
And, well, first I feed them. Okay. And so my older dog, he rides shotgun in the back seat. The other dogs each got their own compartment.
Okay, so, I missed something.
Yeah.
You're traveling with four or two?
Four dogs. I got four dogs
that
with me.
You own?
That I own, yeah.
Okay, because I want to keep, in this story, there's a part I still don't understand. I want to know how the four dogs had very different
outcomes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're all together.
It was real easy to explain in hindsight.
In hindsight, okay.
So they all feed, and they feed in their boxes, or you know, so they don't fight over food.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure they got
a bowl of dog food in their box.
In their box. And you make sure they finish eating, put the food away. My youngest dog that I still have, Miller,
Is that named after the beer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I actually got the dog back from a lady who named it after the beer because she knew I drank Miller Lite. So I got this dog. He's at the point where he doesn't know his name. Like to call him off of something or if he starts running, he would literally ignore me. His obedience training wasn't there.
And that was too young or he's no good?
No, too young, and he wasn't worked with when this person had the dog. And that was one of the reasons he was going as an example dog about training a dog with that age with almost no obedience, you know, just little crazy dog.
You were bringing him to show him as a bad example of a dog.
Exactly. Exactly. We do that in dog things. Okay. You want to show the good performance, you want to show the bad and the things in between, and then people can relate to it. Like, yeah, my dog will stay that long.
Yeah, no, that's great. So, yeah. Rather than just showing him like the world's greatest dog.
Then you learn nothing.
Yeah.
So then I had my senior dog, Bravo, who knows all of his commands. So every time he was out, I just let him outside the truck and I'd say, Bravo, shh, and he'd come back. Bravo, shh. Miller wanted to run with the other two dogs, the three-year-olds, but I didn't want him to. So I kept him on a 30-foot check cord wrapped around my waist.
Okay.
He could run around. I could drink a beer. I'm talking with my buddy Gary. We're having a good time.
So four dogs, one on a leash, one super obedient,
yep.
And two are up-and-comers who take off.
Yep. And I can see them the entire time. Like they run down to the reservoir, they run back up a hill. They're not out chasing deer or anything. They're within 100 yards of me at all times. Because I can see them. There's no leaves on the trees. The topography was such that I'm looking down at the reservoir. There was an old abandoned camp building there that they used for storage. To my knowledge, the doors were all locked and everything. And I did see the dogs go down to the reservoir and get a drink. They came back wet, so I knew that's what they did.
Okay.
So fast forward, get the dogs back. You give them each water again to help digest their food, their meal overnight. And you put them in their boxes. And so that was about 9, 10 o'clock at night, 9:30 at night. I closed the tailgate. Went to the parking area, sat and talked with Gary for a little bit. You could hear the dogs rustling around in their boxes. So everything seemed normal, like every time I've ever had the dogs out. And at 5:30 in the morning, we got up, went to go air the dogs out. And I opened the tailgate, and I can hear Miller on the right scratching to get out. So you never go to your box like, oh boy, I hope it's
alive.
You no more than you walk in this room and don't expect to see one good bed and towels. You know, it's that same assumption.
Yeah.
So he's scratching to get out because he's that little crazy guy that doesn't have any obedience. The other ones have been in boxes so long, they just wait. They don't scratch at the door.
They're going to get out at the same time no matter what they do.
They know the deal. And I open the middle door. And I see Katie, her head pressed up against the wall, and I immediately know she's dead. I mean, there's just...
Really?
I mean, you could just say your eye was half open, you know, like even when an animal dies, it never looks like it does when it's bedded.
Yeah.
When it just kind of smashed.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. And I touched her, and she was already like rock hard with rigor mortis. And I'm like, oh shit. And I can hear him scratch, and I open the other door, and there's Oscar, same way. He's just curled up.
Dead.
Just dead. And I reached in and I mean, rigor, I don't know how long, you guys talked about that. How long does rigor take? A couple hours? Two, three hours to get really...
Oh, to set up?
To set up really hard.
Yeah, I'd say.
So when I told my vet all this, she said that they probably died somewhere around 1 or 2 in the morning. They would not be that... Rigor mortis would not be so hard that I could not bend their legs back out to... It would have been a futile attempt to see what happened to them, but they were that stiff, you mm-hmm. know. So then the whole thing went to where I had to bring them. I actually put bags of ice on one of them, in case it got warm on the way home. And I was told to do that just because, you know, things, you know, like any animal, they get hot from dying and you want to keep them, you want to keep
them
cold.
So are you initially like emotional or like kind of like in shock?
It took me an hour to even close the tailgate. Me and Gary sit there and cried and kept saying, WTF, yeah, WTF, WTF, WTF.
Thinking someone killed him.
Thinking someone popped something into each one of their holes. You know, they could have reached in and gone through the sliding window. And then I kept thinking they suffocated. They suffocated. They can't suffocate. They sleep in these things all the time. Can't suffocate.
Yeah, but they're not. They're like, they're full of holes and.
Right, exactly. But okay. my brain is they suffocated.
Trying to figure it out.
Trying to figure it out.
Because nothing else makes sense.
Yeah, their two sliding windows happen to be closed, and Miller's was slid open. So then I'm like, they suffocated. Anyway, so called my vet. They did a autopsy on one of them. There was no point to do both. They obviously got into something. And I gave you that text earlier. They found three chemical compounds that suggest exposure to alcohol, whatever that alcohol would be. Wasn't Miller Lite. I know that for a fact because they drink that. You know, when I drop a can, they'll lick it all up. It was not antifreeze because it takes days for a dog to die from antifreeze. They don't die like that. So it was something that had got to their liver and they bled out internally. And it's never been determined what that substance was. I don't know if it's something that's naturally occurring, fermented. Somebody left out a pail of something they cleaned from a campground. I'll never know. And
did you look around where they had been?
No, I wish I would have. Because the whole thing was like, I had to get to this clinic, tell them what happened, tell them goodbye. I got to get back to Michigan. And I was so like in shock. I just never.
Could the grounds been baiting for rodents or anything?
The state called me several times. The state biologist, state veterinarian, Michigan state veterinarians talked to them. I asked, there's a product people use for killing raccoons and possums that would kill a dog that fast. Very few, but those things are always almost identifiable in their stomach contents. So, yeah, we won't know. But word to everybody, you never know. Don't let your kids play in junkyards.
But you don't
keep your dogs close.
You don't feel that, like, based on what you've seen dogs do, you don't feel that they would drink bourbon.
No. I've seen dogs around people drinking brown water. Never seen a dog lap it up, although I have had friends say, oh, yeah, my dog will lick my glass of bourbon with, you know.
But not keel over dead from it.
No. You'd have to drink a lot, I would think.
And the vet or the lab interpreted for you that this is an alcohol. And when you look it up, it's just everywhere. It's like the kind of alcohol that's found in everything. Yeah.
Those three things that were identified in the liver biopsy or whatever it was, and all it says is suggest exposure to alcohol. You know, there's isopropyl alcohol, there's Jack Daniels, there's antifreeze is an alcohol. Anything that doesn't freeze is an alcohol. So could it have been an old can of windshield wiper fluid?
That's not true that anything that doesn't freeze is an alcohol.
Well, okay, that's not accurate, is it?
And alcohol freezes.
At some temperature.
Yeah. I was talking about the other day. We used to have Boone's Farm. We take Boone's Farm ice fishing, and the Boones would freeze, except the syrup would rise up to the top. The booze and the sugar would rise to the top, and then you could have like a
slushy.
Yeah, ice fishing slushy.
So yeah, that's how what happened.
And you never went back to go look around.
No. It was a 6-hour drive, and it was like I'm not going to change the outcome of the day.
And you're not going to run your dogs there again.
I'm not going to run my dogs there again. And if in a conspiracy world, if the state was using some bait to take care of mice and squirrels, and I don't think they were going to leave it lay around because they already knew what happened.
Yeah,
that's a conspiracy part of me. You know, I don't think my walk around would have produced anything. On the other hand, it could have produced an old cook pot that had acorns fermenting in it. I don't know.
Fruit.
Yeah, turned into fruit. Apples. A whole bushel of apples in a steel bucket. Who knows? It could have been something like that.
But there wasn't anything like, and this is a common, they said it was common in a whole bunch of different things, but not in particular in some kind of bait or anything.
It was
like
anything
that
identifiable on the market.
The interesting part is that the two dogs that stayed close lived and the two dogs that ran around died.
Yeah. Kind of creepy almost, a little bit. Makes you want to just, I think that's why, you know, it's like houndsmen, they're kind of used to losing their dogs.
Yeah.
It's like that's you buy into that. But your bird hunter and your pet owner, you don't buy into that. You barely buy into the fact that you're going to outlive your dog. People can't even handle that. A houndsman is like, they might cry when the dog dies, but they go into it.
Like, just, you mean losing them to bears and pigs and lions?
Cliffs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, that's what happened. That's all we know on that.
And do you insure your dogs?
No, never have.
Yeah. I'm sure that's something that's available.
I probably could. Yeah.
So how much of a setback was it? How much, like as a breeder, how much of a setback was it?
Well, I need...
Like hunting-wise and breeding-wise.
Hunting-wise, I'd be a little low on dog power. And breeding-wise, I had another female that was a year old last year, so she could have been the next one. And she just died of kidney failure right before Christmas. So,
how old?
A year and 5 months old or something like that.
Ten? Ten dog years, 10 years old.
Ten years old. Yeah, yeah. True tragedy. So,
oh, man.
Yeah. So I'm set way back. I won't have a. Although I did drive all the way to Waycross, Georgia, to pick up a puppy that was 7 months old.
So you actually now have to go buy dogs.
Yeah, they can't make them out of boys. And Artie's too old to breed. She'd still be willing, but
dude,
I wouldn't.
So like Dancing Duke Kennels is like out of business.
It's
just Duke Kennels. There ain't no dancing for a while.
Crying Duke Kennels.
That's it.
Yeah, Dancing Duke, man. No shit.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I've kind of like known this, but I like to hear the whole thing.
Yeah, we don't get time to chit chat.
But Ron, when we're out hunting, those dogs are hundreds of yards away from us at times, right?
Yeah, whatever that's the one thing I would love to know. What that dog got into, I would love to be able to write something up and let the rest of the world know, like, boy, don't think you're safe even with this.
Yeah, but what is the, like, it's one of those things, and you're the last guy in the world to submit to, like, irrational paranoia.
Right.
Am I saying that right? Paranoia? Yeah. Because there's no lesson. Don't let your dogs run around 100 yards away from you.
Right.
Stuff happens. It's a lesson.
It's just like I asked Yanni last night about you guys and bears. That'd be like you guys never going into the woods again. So there's a lesson learned, but what's the lesson? You know, it's only a lesson on that property. It's not, I'm going to let my dogs go hunt and work.
Well, when we're corner hopping, you know, you have a farmer that will have a rock pile on his corner because he's getting everything out of his field, old tractor, and you know who knows what you start coming across.
Corner hopping can get you in trouble.
Yeah.
have you lost a dog to a rattlesnake yet?
No. In fact, I don't know anybody who has, but I know I've heard of people who have.
Yeah, I guess it's got to hit them in the... They hit all the time. I guess it's got to hit them in the throat or mouth if it's going to kill them.
I don't think in the sebaceous tissue or something, I don't think it does much to them.
Saw a porcupine attack one time with one of Ronnie's dogs.
Well, the dog...
Oh, that didn't kill it either, though.
No, the dog attacked a porcupine.
Yeah, man, it was gnarly.
Yeah, you put that picture in your book.
Dude, it was amazing.
Right.
That dog had porcupine quills from its nostrils to its testicles.
He just full
wrap this thing, man.
Wrapped around his mouth.
Continue to hunt that
we'll
day.
See, you know what? We'll put these pictures. We'll put the pictures of your dog up on the show notes. The porcupine Zeno. Dog on the show notes.
Yeah, Zeno and Hope, but Zeno got the brunt of it.
I don't know if I mentioned this before. I think I have, but we were out hunting one time in Pooter. I can't remember if it was me or Poot, but one of us filled a doe tag, and the deer had obviously run over a porcupine.
Really?
Well, you know, that's the only way I can explain it, because her whole underside was full of quills.
Wow.
So in my mind, she's hauling ass through the woods.
Trip.
And there's a porcupine. He's like, bah! And puts his tail up.
Really?
Right? Oh, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, how else would
she... She's not going to, like, fight it. She wasn't, like, attacking
it. She wasn't going to lay on
her nose, yeah.
So... Huh.
That's strange.
Man, it was so infected. It was just... Full of infections and pus and stuff up and down her belly. We were hunting sheep one time, hunting doll sheep with my brother's old girlfriend. And it was like, I think he was walking point and she was right behind him. Or however, I can't remember how we were configured going up through these alders. And all of a sudden she comes rolling down the hill screaming bloody murder. And she had walked under a porcupine. and he had smacked her right where her shoulder met her neck.
Really?
Yeah. Put maybe 13, I think it was 13 quills or something, right where her shoulder met her neck. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, when you said attack, I didn't, but you're right. They will use their tail in defense. I forgot about
that.
Yeah,
what they don't do, which cartoons will lead you to believe, is that they can launch quills.
Like an English army of arrows.
Yeah, but it's like, it's smart. That kind of myth, it's like, I guess with kids and stuff, it's smart to allow them to believe that that's true.
Not a bad thing.
Because
all stoves are hot.
Yeah.
But I don't think that most people are never corrected about the porcupine myth.
No, I would tell them when they were 12 or so, I would say, you know, to be honest with you, that thing can't shoot its quills.
It's a rite of passage. You got to sit them down and say, hey, just so you know, there's
birds,
no Easter bunny, and that porcupine does not launch quills. Yep.
This means number two. This means number two. This means and porcupines cannot shoot quills.
Man.
Where do we go from there? Yeah. Depressing story.
Oscar and the saga of Oscar
we're
and Katie.
We're still hoping to find out, but obviously we won't. Yep. Maybe somebody else will hear this. And
I'm surprised you're not more obsessed with like learning the truth.
I don't know what else I can do. You know, I mean, I think the tissue samples are probably destroyed. I don't think they save them. You know, I mean, forensically, maybe some Einstein guy would. Maybe one of your listeners is a vet.
We'll put, here's the thing, on the show notes.
Any idea?
We will put the
similar.
Yeah, because we actually just got a really mean letter from a vet who, he's real mad. He feels like, I think that a lot of people were like, he works in the ag industry and he was real pissed about some stuff Rogan was saying about Big Ag. I don't have a problem with Big Ag, nor have I ever said I had a problem with Big Ag whatsoever. But he feels that guys that like to hunt are somehow down on Big Ag. Like, it's like a Big Ag guy apparently gets mad if people start extolling the virtues of other types of meat. So he was mad about that. But that guy, he's a vet. So what you could do is on the show notes, we'll put up a picture of your dog with its mouth full of quills.
Yeah.
We'll put up a picture of these dogs when they're happy and in the old days.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll put up a picture of cute Bracco Italiano puppies.
Okay.
And then we'll put up the toxicology report.
There you go.
And we will allow people to interpret the results.
What I'm getting at, it might come up. We might not get any vet, but
a
very similar thing could have happened to Joe Blow in Colorado, and they might have got to the bottom of it, and that all might make more sense.
Sure.
See, the other thing I forgot to say, the one thing that'll kill a dog like that is called blue algae, and that occurs a lot.
I know blue algae.
You know what that is?
It'll kill elk.
It'll kill elk, too.
So
if a dog drinks blue, you literally, if he drinks enough and gets the blue algae, you don't have enough time to even get him to the vet. He's dead.
Yeah, like when it wipes out herds of animals, they'll all be laying around the water hole.
Yeah, they're not even dispersed.
They don't make it that far.
Right.
But that wouldn't come up as alcohol poisoning.
Exactly. Exactly.
But the mystery thickens. You ever have cows just die for no reason, Doug?
Boy, it's been long. I mean, why did that cow die? You know, a better question. Like we found a cow dead in the pasture one time, and
you never like look into it. It's not worth the money to look into it.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had one die for, you know, usually if they're looking bad, you get rid of them. I mean, you know, so it's not, I mean, you check them out and then decide, you know, what you're going to do with them.
Do you ever cry when they die?
I'm pretty kind to my animals, you know.
Even so you cry when they die? Because you don't cry when you're sending them off to slaughter.
No, but I don't cry when they die, but when I'm putting an animal on the, I mean, it's something that happens as you get older, I guess. Yeah. I put even steers that I'm butchering on
like
the trailer.
Like you develop a Reagan-esque tendency to crying.
Well, no, I'm not crying, but I have a different attitude about it.
You have some empathy.
Empathy, and I know what I'm doing.
You know what's happening
there. I mean, it doesn't mean I don't.
Like you know you're on the doorstep of death yourself.
but you don't come in the house. Doug,
I do think about that.
I honestly don't know what you guys. You guys are having like a weird conversation. I don't understand what you're saying right now. Oh. You're like, oh, you know, and then like, you know what?
Well,
I asked you a flat out question.
I don't cry when the cattle die.
Do you cry when you send them off to slaughter?
I don't cry when I send them off to slaughter, but I have a different feeling about it than I did when I was younger.
Okay. Explain that, please, if you don't mind. Explain what that feeling is.
And what I was referring to was when Ron was saying that earlier, when he was in his 20s and 30s, he didn't have the same emotions about the dogs. And, of course, you get more attached to a dog than you do a cow or a steer or whatever. But I spend a lot of time with them, and it's part of why my animals are so calm and everything. And I mean, I put them on the trailer, and I thank them. I know where they're going, but I'm like, you know, it's a somber thing for me. It's part of why I want them just to be cool and, you know, say, hey, thanks.
But
looking forward to that steak.
It's like, hey, thanks.
You guys.
Well, yeah. I mean, so.
So
I'll not talk about that.
Okay,
anymore.
No, I'm fine.
Doug's crying right now.
The thing about it is, you're saying that you have felt that you were either you used to be more callous, or you're just more sort of emotionally aware of the cycles of life and death now.
Yes. Because I'm nearer to death myself, as you said.
That's where I'm going with this. Is you feel that you're like, you know, you recently lost your father.
Yep. I think that one of the things that I've thought about, and you recently had a birthday. I recently had a birthday, and you know, I'm 59 years old, and you know, you have a lot more. I have
halfway to 118.
Yeah. Well, I have a lot more. When I say, boy, 30 years ago, when I was, you know, 29. Well, 30 years from now, you know.
Yeah.
I'm 89. Well, then I think about my mom, and she's still, you know, cruising along. But
does she cry when the cows go?
My mom has no regard for cattle whatsoever.
Okay. Really?
So yeah. It won't get worse, apparently.
But she doesn't. She's not involved with the farm. The farm's not her.
Do you think you'll get to a point where you can't send cattle off to slaughter? Is it that fast, or is it just a really gradual thing that's happening to you?
I can't imagine a time when cattle still wouldn't just be cattle to me. I mean, that doesn't mean you treat them badly or anything like that. I mean, it's just a process, you know. It's.
Would you send puppies off to slaughter?
Yeah.
My father tells a story that he, like, in the old days, he would, no joke, he would be sent out to get rid of litters of kittens. Mm.
Done that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did not like it, but he was made to do it.
We picked up a kitten, my wife and daughter and I, we picked up a kitten from another farm, and we asked, the guy said, oh, yeah, come by and get a kitten. And I'm like, oh, man, because there was a cat at the farm that needed something. My daughter and wife decided that the cat at the farm needed a playmate. So when I say kitten, I don't mean a little furry. I mean, you know, one that's a young cat. So we go up to this guy's place, and I thought, I'm just going to be able to say no when I get there. But, oh, no, we're taking one of these cats with us, you know. So, well, we didn't bring anything along to put it in. That was sort of my, you know, way out. And John goes, the farmer says, well, I got a gunny sack.
Mm-hmm.
So he grabs the cat. I grab the gunny sack. He drops the cat in. I close the top of it, and that cat came up and bit. And we named the cat Biter later because it came up and bit me, bit me through the bag and held on. I had blood running down my arm, and I can only think that it would figure the next thing coming in there was a rock, and it was going to get tossed off.
He's like, I heard about this.
Yeah. It's like cats know about gunny sacks.
Next thing you know, you're on the end of some dock.
That cat ended up being one of the coolest cats ever, though, and I'm not a cat guy at all.
I grew up around in Derry. You know, dairy production areas, and the dairy farmers would like to have cats because they would need to control mice and rats. So they wanted cats, but then they were always in this sort of delicate balance where you needed like enough cats, but then you get too many cats. They would get, the farmers would use is feline distemper.
Yeah.
And that would like sweep through the cat population and wipe them all out. So the farmers were often in a situation of trying to cull. They would have cats, and they're not spaying and neutering these things. And it would get out to where there's a whole bunch, and they would want to cull the herd, cull the population of cats, and would, on occasion...
have the Ranella boys come over?
They would, on occasion, seek assistance, seek paid help in reducing the cats for fear of a cat of a disease outbreak. And it didn't occur to them, I don't know why, that to spay and neuter. But I think there's just enough stray cats running around. They just find their way. They find their way there.
Farm cats. Yeah, I mean it's just a type of cat. I mean, actually, the cat that we have in the house is a farm cat.
I think Mark Kenyon was saying, wasn't he? Mark Kenyon saying that all of a sudden he has 13 cats. Living outside of his house?
They just because he fed one or something?
One showed up, and the next thing you know, that thing made love.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I said, no, he's just got cats everywhere.
Yeah.
Not anything he did. So, Doug, you've just been saying. All right.
Well, Steve, what about veal with the...
Oh, I'm dead set against veal. We don't even have to have that conversation.
Yeah. You're against veal?
I am against veal. We had a neighbor who raised veal. I dealt with it. It's not a pretty sight.
Yeah, and you got any concluding thoughts
on veal?
No, just concluding thoughts in general.
Yeah, we might have to edit this out, or maybe we'll keep it in. But did you read the email that came in about us being wrong about bow hunting?
Yeah, but that guy's just overly sensitive.
Yeah.
A bow hunter being overly sensitive? I'm shocked.
Oh,
you didn't even want to talk about it.
No, it doesn't even warrant. It's like, I just think that, like.
Yeah, well, we can talk about it when we're done.
It's just like, I just don't get, like we have 1,000 bow, like, we have thousands of bow hunters. That's an exaggeration. We have loads of bow hunters on the show. I've no stranger to bow hunting. You bow hunt. I just don't get it. It doesn't even matter.
You don't talk about bow hunting enough.
Well, he has an anecdote laden rebuttal to the idea that there's a higher wound loss.
Oh,
that there's higher wound loss with archery than firearms, backed up by the fact of three things that happened to me.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that was a problem.
Do you have any concluding thoughts, Yanni?
No.
Really? All right, Doug. You don't like veal. I'd love to talk about it more, but I just feel like I'm done talking about livestock.
Fair enough. I'm done talking about livestock, too. Yeah, it's just nice to be here in South Dakota.
That's it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. We've covered so many different things here that I mean, there's tons of stuff I'd talk about, but...
Listen, I feel bad. I only don't want to talk about it because...
About veal? No, I don't want to talk about veal either.
I just don't feel like, because, you know, I don't feel like with all the recreational outrage that it'll generate of some guy who raises veal and his cows are the nicest cows in the world.
So I have a concluding thought then. One of the things I actually thought about before I came, I asked Yanni, well, you know, should I be prepared to talk about anything? As if I've ever been prepared to talk anything when I've been on one of your podcasts. But
yeah, but it's like that Picasso quote. Picasso, Pablo.
The whole...
He sketches a thing out on a napkin, right? And it's worth all this money. And someone says, hey, it only took you 5 minutes. Says, that took a lifetime.
Yeah.
Right? So you're just prepared from...
A lifetime. 59 years now. It's nice to take a break from talking about CWD, which I've been doing a lot of. So,
yeah. That's your concluding thought.
That is my concluding thought.
Roof? Rough?
Like, I've known Ronnie since 1964. I remember...
How old were you guys that year?
I was 4. He was maybe 5 or 6.
Naked in the pool?
Well, they probably were. But not in high school.
Well, I've met... You know, I've known about you for years. I remember when he hired you, when your dad promised him a couple of good workers.
He personally guaranteed my labor.
That's right. Yes, he did. But I've met a lot of people here at Pheasant Fest. So if you line them up 1 through 100, this whole hunting and sportsmen and it's all around, you know, obviously Pheasant Fest this week. Number one, quail. If you line up these people, 100 people, 1 in 100 may not be attached, but there's a bridge from 1 to 2 all the way down where these people are all linked together, and
you're finding that out.
Yeah, it's from walking around. It just spreads so horizontal. It's crazy. Yeah.
It was cool.
Very cool. Yeah.
Good.
Oh, that's a deep thought.
That's a good plug for.
Boy, wow. I can't even.
You got nothing like that.
Well, can't top of that. I would like to encourage all your listeners to
never let their dogs get out of sight.
And to listen to my podcast called The Hunting Dog Podcast, which we started on the same day 3 years ago.
Shameless promotion.
Shameless plug for
shameless.
Ron
Available
Baines.
On any format where a fellow finds a
all
podcast.
All formats they can find The Meat Eater, they can find The Hunting Dog Podcast.
If you want to do a deep dive into hunting dogs that goes beyond just losing a couple of them.
Right. It goes into we've had conservationists on, we've had trainers on, we've had breeders on, we've had Pheasants Forever on, Rough Grouse Society, come on, loggers, come on. So I try to cover a lot of topics, but just the same shameless plug.
With the center of the bullseye being bird dogs.
Yes. Always a connection, too. If the person's going to be a logger, he's got to have a bird dog. It's like, you know, we got something to yak about. So I thank you for starting your podcast in Texas, and we thank Joe Rogan for starting you on your podcast in Texas, because that's how you got started.
First ever episode.
And that's
Ransom Canyon, Texas.
And that's as soon as I hung up the headphones, I said, I'm going to do this about dogs.
It's life for me.
So thank you, Stephen.
I don't have any concluding thoughts. I do feel real guilty about cutting you off about that veal, Doug.
I don't know why you would feel guilty about it.
Hey, table that up.
All right, thank you for listening.